solar flares and other nasties reduced the sunlight from that hot old star out there. A very dumb technology that becomes smart if you scale it up. But it's broken, Jophiel said evenly. Think how long it would take to build such a thing. And then think how long it would take for it all to fall apart to this extent.
This is an old system, said Ben Gubber. Old. Engineered, worked out.
That's the impression we're getting, Nicola said. Monumental ruins. Okay. Gubber D.
Hey, Jophiel protested. What about C?
She grinned at him. Saving the best to last. Gubber D, like E, F and G, turned out to be a gas giant. None of the quartet was as large as Jupiter. There was no trace of mega-engineering to be seen here, Nicola said, but still it was clear intelligences had been at work. Resource depletions, she said. Of fusion-friendly helium isotopes. Of exotic hydrocarbons in the upper atmosphere. Possibly even of metallic hydrogen from the planet's cores. And maybe other stuff we're not recognising. Everything we can think of that we'd find useful is in anomalously short supply. Maybe they even mine the magnetic fields for energy. The way you used Io and Jupiter to build your wormholes, Jophiel. Or anyhow, Michael did.
But still, to have caused lingering, visible depletions on the scale of a gas giant takes a long time, Ben Gubber said. A lot of resources extracted. That's the theme of the whole system, isn't it? It took a long time to get this way.
It needn't be the Chile, by the way, Asher said. We've travelled a long way in human terms, but we've only taken baby steps into the galaxy. We've only encountered two intelligent species, the Chile and the wormhole ghost, and they came to us. But there's every reason to think that there must be many races out there, or there were.
She looked around at her crewmates, and Jophiel wondered if she was wary of giving too bleak a perspective.
The universe isn't young, you see, nor is the galaxy. Most of our galaxy's stars have already been born, and we're latecomers to the party. Chances are there have been many races come and gone, of builders and technologists whose ruins we might see, and others who left no trace at all, back to the earliest days of the universe. In fact, we believe that the Chile is a relic of a very early era, just after the Big Bang itself.
Jophiel said, So this may be typical of what we'll find. Vast ruins worked out mines.
Maybe, Nicola said, and she grinned. But what's not typical of this system is that we heard that human signal.
Jophiel had to grin back. And you're about to tell us the location that signal came from.
As far as we can tell.
She waved a hand and the image of another vivid world coalesced above her head.
Gubber C.
Jophiel could see at a glance that this was a much more complex world than its siblings, and that it was alive, or anyhow it looked that way. Evidently a big world, but rocky, like Earth, not a giant of gas or ice. The atmosphere was neither entirely transparent nor entirely opaque. It was cloudy, misty, elusive. In places, higher ground seemed more clearly visible, as if pushing out of that murky air. Chains of huge mountains crossed ragged continents. Perhaps there were oceans, Nicola said. The gleam of ice white stretched far from each pole. And in places, Jophiel thought he could see grey-green. Life? Two moons hung in the sky, apparently bare, sunlit rock. Asher took over.
You're looking at a super-Earth. Significantly more massive than Earth. 40% higher gravity, it won't be comfortable down there. Actually, more strictly, it's like a super-Mars. Even though Gubber is more luminous than the Sun,
Goober Sea is twice as far as Earth was from the sun, and the planet gets only about a third of the sunlight Earth received, less than Mars itself. But the surface is warmer than Mars. Not from the sunlight, but because the planet's that much bigger, with more residual heat. And it's kept more of an atmosphere. That blanket you can see is surprisingly thick. It contains about 5 times the mass of Earth's atmosphere in carbon dioxide alone. And so there's a strong greenhouse effect, Jophiel guessed. Correct, Asher said. Enough to make this world habitable. Mars had its lattice. It had life, but nothing so obvious as Earth life. Too cold, too dry, nothing like that. He pointed at the greenish patches. That does seem to be life, yes. There's a kind of photosynthesis going on, but the native algae or plants or whatever are splitting carbon dioxide and the local rocks to release hydrogen, not oxygen. We're guessing this from what we can measure in the air. We can figure it all out when we get close up. As far as we can tell, down there, the air is thick as a shallow ocean and you'll need oxygen tanks to breathe, but at least it's warm. Nicola grinned. And Jophiel. Here's the big reveal. Down in those deep valleys... What? Hull plate. Jophiel felt cold. Chile technology. Right. Swathes of it, blanketing the landscape. No other Chile signature. No discontinuity drive gravity waves. No planet buster energy leakages. But yes, they've been here at least. We don't know what this means. Jophiel said, but whoever sent those messages with the human content is still down there. Correct. Jophiel, like most of the crew, flinched, startled. The voice, deep, gravelly, without inflection, mechanical, had seemed to boom from the sky. He looked up. A silver sphere hung in the air above all their heads, eclipsing the pinprick glow of Goober's star. A couple of meters across, perhaps, evidently massive. Somebody shot at it. Jophiel heard the crack of the release. What looked like a staple sailed without deflection through the gleaming carcass of the intruder. There was no evident wound, no damage. Some kind of virtual, then. Jophiel glared around to see who was responsible. A young crew member was holding up a staple gun. Nicola moved first, grabbed the gun from the crewman. That thing's no more real than Jophiel over there. Good job, too. No more assaults unless authorized. Now the crew began to speak up. But that thing's inside our life dome. Even if it just got projected in here. I know that thing. I saw the recordings from Jupiter space. That's a wormhole ghost. Which of you, the visitor thundered now, is the pool? The crew fell silent. Nicola and Asher instinctively moved to Jophiel, as if to shield him. Just as instinctively he tried to push them away. He ended up walking through their bodies, with sharp pains from consistency violation warnings. But as he stepped forward, Nicola murmured in his ear, Jophiel, remember your software. If you can send a message through the wormhole link to the couchy, do it now, before the ghosts disable the interface or... Good thinking. He closed his eyes, focused, and broke his consistency protocols again, digging into his own source code to open a channel to the couchy. He began to dump down a situation summary, raw data, and a plea for help. This kind of cheating was physically painful, and making a request for help to his faux sibling was galling. He did it anyway. He looked up at the ghost, for he was sure that identification was correct. I am Poole. Michael Poole. He... I'm a projection of the original. As you are of your own original, apparently. How do you know me? Why are you here?
Actually, you came to us,
the ghost pointed out. Almost dryly, Jophiel thought, bemused.
We waited until you had clearly indicated your knowledge of our location and that of your conspecifics.
We came in peace.
We take control.
A flash of light beyond the hull. The floor shuddered. An alarm wailed and lights flickered. Jophiel was unaffected, but the crew around him stumbled, grabbed at the zero-gravity guide ropes, gathered into little groups helping each other. Jophiel glanced over at Nicola, who was pouring at a soft screen. Tell me what it's done.
Leith.
The spine has been severed below the life dome. Just like that. She stared at him, horrified. They decapitated the ship, Jophiel. Jophiel felt a deep, sick reaction to that news, almost as if he had been injured himself. Something new moved in the sky, beyond the ghost's bulk, beyond the dome. Jophiel stared up. A kind of silver tangle, along whose threads droplets of molten silver moved. More ghosts? Some kind of ship?
Your conspecifics believed you would come to save them, Poole,
the ghost said now, its voice booming over the rising clamour. Jophiel yelled back, You mean humans? On another ship?
They have called for you for over 1,000 years.
Shadows shifted, cast by the raw sunlight of the system. They were being moved. Jophiel turned to his seniors.
Get this dome secured, and the crew. Skin suits and tethers, move!
They moved. Chapter 13. An hour later. Inside the dome, the crew were in airtight shelters, or out in the open buckled to guide ropes. All of them were in skin suits. Still the starscape shifted, still the dome was being dragged through space. Where? To the planet, Guba C, one of the moons? And how? Jophiel saw no physical linkage between the detached life dome and the surrounding ghost ships. There was no sense of acceleration, yet they seemed to be moving quickly deeper into the stellar system. And Jophiel's ship was gone. It was like a traumatic wound. Like Cauchy and Gear, the island had been based on a sketch design of an interstellar exploration vessel that had been in Michael Poole's notebooks long before the Chile incursion of the solar system. A dream of boyhood, almost. And Poole had got to build it, though not in the circumstances he'd imagined. Now, after 20 years of flight, island had been casually destroyed, just minutes after its first encounter with these ghosts. The severed spine, the gut-drive pod, ice mined from a keeper object in the solar system, now relics to be curiously examined, perhaps by alien beings more than 1,000 light-years from Sol. And the crew, hushed, were staring up at the ghost vessels. If that was what they were. Sliding past the life dome, they were tangles of what looked like silvery rope, along which ran trains of glinting spherical droplets. Were the droplets the ghosts themselves? If so, they must be immune to raw space, to the vacuum, to stellar and cosmic radiation. Each of the ships was a rough ovoid, Jophiel supposed, but he could see no clear symmetries. And as he studied blown-up images, he made out what looked like equipment embedded in the deep tangle, boxes and spheroids, some apparently transparent. In one such box he glimpsed a murky green, like water from a shallow ocean. He could see nothing that looked obviously like a drive unit, nothing like the island's gut drive, a massive rocket engine that had been mounted on a kilometres-long spine. It was hard to see how those loose, tangled structures could withstand even the smallest acceleration, Yet here these ships were, drifting around the wreck of his own vessel, the best humanity could offer. The ships were magnificent, but of an utterly inhuman design.
Jophiel.
Nicola stood before him. Some kind of inertial control, he murmured.
What?
Those ships. No apparent internal support. Just as there's nothing visibly gripping the life dome. As if all this is contained in some invisible shell or field.
Jophiel.
We experimented with such things on a smaller scale at Pool Industries. Inertia control fields, massively power-hungry. She punched him in the head. Her fist passed through his face, his skull, and his vision broke up into shards of pixels, as if he was looking through a smashed window. The pain was extraordinary, like an electric shock delivered deep inside his head. But when she withdrew, he recovered quickly, the consistency protocol violation pain triggers fading. His vision cleared.
Ow! That hurt. Good!
Look, we rehearsed procedures for all kinds of contingencies, but not something like this.
Lead us!
He looked around now at the interior of the life dome. The green grass, ponds glassed over for conditions of microgravity, a confused-looking chicken flapping in the air upside down, and the people, the crew, still clinging to their guide ropes, gathered together in knots as if for mutual protection. They were all silent, passive.
I'm no leader, he murmured to Nicola. Not like this. I suppose Michael was, or at least he looked like he was from the outside. On the inside was me. I'm the embodiment of Poole's doubt, remember? His hesitation, that's why I exist.
She shrugged.
So what? You're all we've got. Your orders?
He looked at the drifting crew, their faces empty, turned to him.
Think, Poole.
Tangle ships.
What?
He pointed at the ghost's vessels. Tangle ships. Name a thing, and you begin the process of controlling it. That's what my mother taught me. Humans named the lightning and eventually tamed it. In the end, we moved the whole earth.
You did that, strictly speaking.
His head was starting to work again. You know, if they were going to kill us quickly, they'd have done so already. And they could, easily, even accidentally.
They may know more about us than you think, Nicola said.
They did send a message with human content, remember? That's what brought us here, or lured us.
True.
But whether they intend to kill us or not, until then we're going to need life support.
Correct. Your orders, Jophiel.
We start preparing for the long term. And this dome is all we have left.
So?
So, we prioritize. They started with power. The life dome had drawn all its primary energy from the gut drive engine, now lost. But it had backup stores of its own, including gut pods and compact fusion generators. Jophiel sent teams scurrying to check that those backups had all come online as they should have. He ordered that the medical systems be secured and asked for an inventory of supplies. Special priority was given to the two pregnant women in the crew and the children born during the cruise. He asked for a roster of food and water stores, with a rationing system to be implemented immediately. In the longer term, they needed to secure their means of food production, from the heavy-duty food printers to, as a backup, the small, low-tech fields of potatoes and corn that had been meant as recreational experiments in farming, a technology abandoned 1,000 years before cold Earth. Still more basic life support systems, whose integrity might have been compromised by the severance from the spine, had to be checked out and secured. Water, air, heating. Nicola muttered to Jophiel,
also data processors. Unless you want to pop out of existence.
You're right, of course. I hope we can sell that to the ghosts.
Oof!
The life dome had lurched sideways abruptly. Nicola grabbed for a guide rope. The virtual consistency protocols were enough to let Jophiel feel a sharp jolt. He glanced up at the dome. A huge planetscape was sliding by, details slowly expanding. Bare, rocky uplands scattered with the lights of what might be habitation. And deeper features, ocean basins, rift valleys, huge geological scars that brimmed with murky air, turbid water. Leith, Asher said. That's Guba C. They took us across 1,000 astronomical units in 90 minutes. A gut ship would have taken 90 days. 1,000 AU is what? 5 light days? Her eyes widened as she worked it out. Oh. Nicola smiled coldly. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of faster-than-light travel. Another jolt. Asher growled. FTL or not. Feels like their magic inertial control field needs a lot of work. They're obviously bringing us down to the planet, Jophiel said. The whole dome. No matter how smart they are, they can't have done this too often.
If we're heading for a bumpy landing, we need to get to the couches, Ben Guba said.
Yeah, good idea. The whole crew. The work can wait. Following brisk orders, the 50-strong crew scattered to their cabins, all of which had crash couches. But Jophiel was gratified to see that a number of the crew dragged out their couches and fixed them to the open deck, as Asher and Nicola did, so they could see where they were being taken to. The dome, accompanied by its tangle ship escorts, seemed to level out in its flight now. An imposing horizon stretched wide, and the ground of Guba C fled beneath the dome's leading edge. Nicola, strapped into her own couch alongside Jophiel, peered ahead, trying to see. That thick air is like an ocean and a murky one. But look, there and there. Shadows that seem to rise above the air itself. Floating islands? Jophiel growled.
Not that.
Super-Earths keep their inner heat better than Earth. And despite the gravity, you must get some spectacular geology. We were told it's more like a super-Mars, remember?
Oh.
And on Mars, Olympus Mons sticks out of the atmosphere.
Right.
So it is here, I think. Huge, aerial continents. He found he was grinning. Imagine climbing one of those features, like that big one, the plateau just ahead. You'd have to carry a pressure suit for the final stages, as if you'd climbed up from the Earth by some ladder to the moon.
You always were one for spectacle, weren't you? Even now, you exhilarated idiot.
We're descending, heading for that big plateau. I think we're going to land on top of that feature. Chapter 14. In the last stages, a cratered ground fled beneath the prow of the life dome. Guba's star cast long shadows. Above, at this altitude, only thin clouds were draped over a black sky. Ice clouds, perhaps, very high, Jophiel realized. This really was like descending on Mars, on Olympus Mons. But the landscapes ahead were extensive. Asher had reported that the plateau they were approaching was itself the size of India, the size of a subcontinent, and Jophiel's mind quailed at the thought of the tectonic forces required to uplift such a mass against the strong gravity of this world. Such vast, raised landmasses must disrupt any air circulation systems, he mused. Perhaps this plateau cast a rain shadow halfway round the planet. Or, on the other hand, that massive atmosphere was so dense and heavy that it might behave more sluggishly, more like an ocean than air. Jophiel imagined permanent wind systems like ocean currents. A lot of detail down there, Nicola murmured. The ground is heavily cratered, almost moon-like. We thought impactors had been cleaned out of this system, didn't we?
Asher said,
I think those craters below us are caldera features. Volcanoes, not impacts. I saw a plume to starboard. Maybe some of them are active, like Olympus Mons again. As if this whole feature is one vast supervolcano and not particularly dormant.
Ghosts, Nicola said now. Or ghost structures, anyhow, down on the ground. Passing over them now, there and there.
Jophiel saw them, especially where shadows sheltered them from the brilliant sunlight. More knots of silver wire, without order or symmetry evident to the human eye, clinging to the rocky surface. Nicola asked,
"Grounded ships?"
I don't think so. Too big for that. Cities, maybe? Colonies? They passed directly over one of those communities. There was still no evident symmetry, but at the rough centre, Jophiel made out a slim tower rising above the tangle, surmounted by a clear blue light. He pointed this out.
Some kind of monument?
Maybe, Nicola said.
We don't know anything about these creatures. What's functional, what's ornamental or ceremonial? Or maybe it's all mixed up, as with humans. Like the Crusaders, who wore the cross of Christ on their chest as a kind of divine armour when going into battle.
Asher grinned. And that is authentic Nicola Emery.
Always eager to please.
Jophiel tried to memorise the detail he was seeing. And thinking about that, he put out a general call to the crew. Someday we may need to find our way out of this place. Record everything. Make sketches. Tuck them into your pocket in case our equipment gets taken off us. Remember, that's all. He got murmured acknowledgements. Nicola nodded.
Max Ward would have approved. No matter how helpless you are, even if you are imprisoned, as long as you can think and observe, you can still work. Count the days on your cell wall. Still advance towards your goals.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Make the most of it.
Jophiel! Harris Kemp's voice. Look down, port side! Jophiel sub-vocalised a command, and a part of the deck turned virtual transparent. He saw that the life dome was now being flown over a particularly large and deep caldera. Steam rose from hot rocks, and Jophiel saw what looked like a mud pool, bubbling.
Surely the air pressure is too low for liquid.
Harris said, I think there's a dome over the whole area. Almost transparent, but not quite. Might not even be a material, some kind of force field. Now Jophiel saw a crowd of ghosts, silver droplets like spilled mercury gathered round the vent. They were lined up in almost orderly queues all around the vent, filing into the heat. I've been watching for a while, Harris reported. The ghosts seem to be taking turns to immerse themselves in that pool of hot mud or whatever. And when they do, they seem to decompose. Nicola raised an eyebrow. Decompose?
That's what it looks like.
Since his stint as a junior technician on Larunda Station, in what now felt like another life, Harris had specialised in medicine and biology. Now he began to speculate on entirely alien life forms. That silver skin peels back. Some kind of internal structures are released. They look like body parts. They spill out into the mud, like independent entities, swimming away, even the skin. But when they're done, they recombine, zipping up inside the spherical skin sac, and they join the lines to pass out of the pool area. Nicola said,
Jophiel, I think we saw something like this before. The wormhole ghost in Jupiter orbit.
Jophiel nodded. After my father shot it, the skin split open and out tumbled what looked like multiple organs. Even multiple organisms. Harris said, Maybe these ghosts aren't unified creatures as we are.
Maybe each of them is a kind of community of symbiotic creatures of different orders. Why, I'm looking at magnified images that show what look like vegetable components in there too. Masses of lichen which must complete the ecological loops of respiration and waste processing. Nicola put in, and the significance of the hot mud pool?
Maybe we're seeing some reflection of the ghosts' origins.
Maybe they need to return to a simulacrum of the oceanic environment where they evolved. Or the tidal pools, whatever. Their dependent organisms may need to be released regularly to stock up on essential nutrients, even to breed among their own kind. Or perhaps to be replaced in the overall ghost autarky if a component ages or is injured.
Nicola raised her eyebrows. Autarky? Word of the day.
In my team, we're debating all this, observing, recording. We don't know how useful this might be, but...
Good work, Harris, Jophiel said. This kind of knowledge is going to be essential if we're going to find an edge here.
And... another jolt of the life dome.
I think we're descending, Nicola muttered.
Jophiel spoke to the crew. Everybody brace for impact. We don't know how gentle our ghost pilots are going to be. Ben Goober called,
I think I can see where they're bringing us down, sir. Right next to the other one.
The other what?
The other life dome.
Chapter 15. The other life dome was a cylinder twice the width and height of the island's relatively modest hemisphere, and multiple decks showed within its interior. Lights glowed sparsely. Jophiel Poole, whose template had laid out the basic design of such ships, recognised its type immediately. The ship had evidently been a scattership, a gut-drive colony ship, before its spine had been cut like the island's. In the Poole Industries design hierarchy, this was a Great Northern class vessel, originally conceived in pre-Chile days as a generation starship, a design that had never been built or flown before the Chile came. After Cold Earth, 10,000 such ships had been sent out into the dark, each ship capable of carrying up to 100,000 human beings. Scraps of the humanity that could no longer be safely supported by the planet of their birth. So there were indeed humans here at Goober's Star, or there had been. Just as the ghost signal, picked up by the rebel virtuals of Gear, had hinted. After the island's life dome was set down on rocky ground, close to the other ship, a ghost came, hovered just outside the dome. When Jophiel was informed, he hurried that way, hurried, though his virtual projection software faithfully transmitted him the burden of this world's 40% higher gravity. Nicola, Asher and Harris followed him more cautiously, Harris with a medical pack slung over his shoulder. They looked out through the dome wall. The ghost seemed to hover effortlessly a metre or so off the ground. Jophiel had the odd sense that it was spinning on some axis, but so featureless was its surface, it cast highlights from Goober's Star high in the near black sky, that it was impossible to be sure. Aside from the apparition in Island's life dome, this was the first time he had seen a ghost close up since his template had encountered the wormhole ghost in Jupiter's orbit, more than 1,000 light-years away and 40 subjective years ago. He wondered what mechanism enabled the ghost to float like that. Another application of that magic inertia control technology. Its voice, somehow projected, sounded next to Jophiel's ear.
I invite you to walk with me to meet your conspecifics.
Again that stylized, very artificial voice.
I know your shelter has access mechanisms.
Airlocks. We call them airlocks. How are you speaking to us? How can we hear you?
That is scarcely relevant. You may emerge in safety. An atmosphere has been provided.
Jophiel glanced up. How? How is it contained? Is there another dome, like over the mud pool? How do you know what we can breathe safely?
Ah. Yes. We know because of our study of the conspecifics who were first brought here over a millennium ago.
A millennium, thought Jophiel. That was a clue. If this ship had been taken not long after leaving the solar system, then that could indeed have been more than a millennium ago. A millennium experienced as less than 2 decades by the crew of the island, thanks to the ship's relativistic speed. Just a few centuries after leaving Earth, such a ship could have travelled no more than a few hundred light-years from Sol under its own gut-drive power, and so the ship, its crew and passengers, must have been brought here by hyperdrive. Jophiel shuddered in the presence of an unknowable alien power. He tried to focus. All right, Ghost. We'll trust you about the air.
You may call me the Ambassador. It is a human label which approaches the reality of my commission by my fellows, and it will distinguish me from others.
Nicola and Jophiel shared a glance. The wormhole Ghost had once called itself the Ambassador to the heat sink.
Come. Follow me. You really are quite safe.
Me first, Jophiel said. But Harris, the medic, shook his head. With respect, Jophiel, you aren't a useful guinea pig. I suggest Nicola goes first. We need a meat sample.
Oh, thanks a lot, Nicola said.
Come on, let's get on with it. They crowded at the airlock, a big, double-doored chamber designed for the passage of significant masses of cargo, both in space and on the ground. Nicola, and then Harris, simply walked through and outside without apparent ill effects. Nicola took a big, deep breath of the air.
So that's what a ghost fart smells like.
Harris dug a sensor out of his pack, studied it, and nodded through the translucent wall to the others.
Safe to follow.
Jophiel and Asher followed them through. Jophiel's experience was only ever going to be a simulated copy of the reality, but he smelled nothing unusual, save a faint scent of sulphur, perhaps a trace of the volcanism that must underlie this whole raised landmass. The ghost rolled towards the other life dome.
The ground has not been prepared, but has been selected as a relatively smooth area. The distance we must cross is less than a kilometer. The separation of your domes was chosen for safety as we brought the second dome down close to the first.
But, Jophiel thought cynically, with enough of a gap to keep the two human communities apart and therefore more easily controlled. He concentrated on the detail as they followed the ghost. A new world for him. Hard, volcanic rocks underfoot, like basalt. The sky above littered with those wispy clouds, that heavy gravity, a dull, deadening load he felt with each step. He could see no sign of whatever shell, physical or otherwise, was containing this scrap of Earth-like atmosphere. He glanced back at the island life dome, a shell of light. Many of the crew were crowded close to the wall, watching them go. And he noticed the wormhole interface, an electric blue tetrahedron still intact on top of the dome. He looked away. If the ghosts had yet to puzzle out that feature and its significance, the only link to the Cauchy, the only possible source of any help, he didn't want to draw their attention to it. Always supposing ghosts could interpret human body language, safest to assume they could.
You should find the air comfortable, warm enough, and the humidity adjusted.
It doesn't bother you, I see, Nicola snapped.
We ghosts are somewhat more resilient. We grew to this form in a harsher place physically than your Earth.
My hide, while an independent life form in itself, is actually a highly developed biotechnological container.
Well, there's no need to brag.
Jophiel felt like prodding the ghost. If you're studying us, we study you. We already know you have a hyperdrive, a faster-than-light drive. Even before you took us on that jaunt from the outer system, we deduced its existence. The timings of the signals you emitted didn't make sense otherwise. The ghost rolled complacently above the ground.
Yes, we have a hyperdrive, and today I have learnt a new human word.
Nicola grunted. A made-up word for something that we haven't yet developed.
Nor have we. In fact, we acquired the hyperdrive long ago in our history, from a trading species called the Chax.
Chax.
You may imagine the cost.
Jophiel glanced at Nicola.
Chax. They both knew that name. The Poole family archive had spoken of this species. One day, a humanity still restricted to the solar system would have been conquered by the Chax. Enslaved. Would have been enslaved.
With humanity already scattered to the stars, Jophiel supposed that particular fate had been averted. Yet, it seemed, the Chax were real. And another little piece of those old prophecies had been confirmed in this extraordinary situation. Reality leaks. Inside his skin suit, Jophiel shuddered.
And in turn,
the ambassador said to him now unexpectedly,
you, the Pool, have an amulet, a ghost artifact handed to you after a reverse time incursion to...
I don't have it, Jophiel snapped. I have a virtual copy which you're welcome to inspect here. He dug the amulet out of his pocket and threw it to the ghost. The ghost made the trinket hover in the air before it.
An inadequate copy. Not without interest, however.
The amulet floated back towards Jophiel. How did you know about it?
It was what drew us to your system in the first place. I mean the system of your origin. We ghosts are explorers, experimenters, traders when it benefits us. We have stationed probes throughout this part of the galaxy, observation posts. One such probe reported back from your system on the appearance of a ghost in a part of the galaxy which no ghost had yet reached in our history, and a ghost artifact of a very advanced design, your amulet. We saw that the ghost was quickly terminated. In response, we would have sent a ship immediately.
Nicola glared. Why? To take revenge. Jophiel murmured. Come on, Nicola. It came here because we detected human signals where there shouldn't be. It was just the same for the ghosts.
The ghost went on. But our probe was also reporting Chile activity of an anomalous kind in your system. We hesitated.
You know about the Chile, then? Nicola said quickly.
We learned your version of the name from intercepted transmissions. It is not clear to us how you came upon that name. It is a corrupted form of that used by other phonic species, but near enough. As for the Chile themselves, they are the reason we are in this system, of course. And indirectly, you...
Jophiel and his crew shared a glance. Jophiel thought of those deep valleys where blankets of Chile hull plate evidently lay like fields of snow. So you were interested in the solar system, Jophiel said. Eventually you did send the Tangle ship.
Another amusing neologism. Yes, we sent a Tangle ship once we were sure the Chile intruder had abandoned the system. It was a party from this star system, this project, in fact. This star is the nearest of our bases to your solar system?
Jofiel asked, what project? Oh, never mind, for now. I'm guessing you arrived after the departure of the Cauchy flotilla, or we'd have known about it. You abducted a scattership in flight.
Several, the ghost admitted. Of which only a few survived with their crew. Others fought hard. We evidently had much to learn about humans.
It said this factually without a trace of regret. Nicola looked murderous but said nothing.
We brought this ship and its human cargo here. Most survived.
Most? There was no reply to that.
We studied the living, the ghost said, and later their descendants intensively, as well as the living things that had travelled with them. We have been here for more than 1,000 of your years, for many generations. Since we acquired them, we have involved humans in our projects, mostly here on this planet, which you now call Guba C. We have learned much. Your own mission has intrigued us, Jofiel Poole. It was not by chance that we found you, or rather you found us. Once we had acquired the scattership, it was an obvious ploy to use its technology and crew to set up lures. Human signals to attract more human ships, lures to which you responded. We had not anticipated, though, finding you, a simulacrum of Poole himself, intent on a mission to the center of the galaxy, to take on a Chile in slower-than-light ships. Not what we anticipated at all. We must discuss this further, said the ghost. But for now...
They were nearing the other ship's life dome, a translucent wall before them. And a woman stood there, outside an airlock. She looked bent, old, very still. Dressed in a worn, much-patched coverall, she leaned on a kind of stick, improvised from a bit of hull metal. Jofiel was distracted by how elderly the life-dome fabric itself looked. Starred by micrometeorite impacts, scuffed in places, yellowed with age, yet intact after 1,000 years. Jofiel, or his template, had seen the scatterships leave for the stars with his own eyes just 20 subjective years ago, and now this. He tried to focus on the woman, herself, 1,000 years old perhaps. No human had ever lived so long on Earth. Still, he hesitated to speak.
Leith Poole? What do you expect her to do, burst into song?
Nicola pushed forward. My name is Nicola Emery. The woman held out one hand like a claw. Nicola gently took it, cupping it in both her hands as if sheltering a baby bird, Jofiel thought. He'd always known Nicola was capable of tenderness if she felt like it. The woman seemed to respond to Nicola very slowly, as if she had little energy, her small body intolerably heavy. Her hair was a snow-white scrape, tied back, he saw now. Her face, small-featured, was blank and oddly smooth, not wrinkled as Jofiel might have expected, as if worn by age, a face of old stone. The voice was a whisper.
Emery? I used to know that name.
Yet her eyes were bright and she smiled. My mother, probably. She was on the World Senate, the UN body.
That must be it.
And she turned at glacial speed to Jofiel.
And I know you. Or your template, at least.
Jofiel felt oddly impressed. You can tell I'm a virtual.
My name is Susan Chen. Once I worked for the Sentience Police before the Chile came, before the displacement. Yes, I can recognize virtuals. I was born in Beijing, in the United Asia Republic. A citizen of the world, as we all were in those days when we add a world.
As she joined their little circle, leaning on her stick, her story seemed to tumble out. A story she had hoarded for 1,000 years, perhaps, if she really was one of the original crew, Jophiel thought.
I was born in the year 3,626.
Just 5 years after me, Jophiel said.
I always followed the exploits of you pools. All those grand wormholes. Was she smiling?
Her face was so immobile it was hard to tell.
I think I had a slight crush on you.
Nicola rolled her eyes.
Well, that's just typical. But then came the displacement and the scattering. Our ship was a green ship called the Gourd. And we ended up here. I'm the only one left. The last of the crew, the original crew. There were children. You will see, they are down in the valleys, the Chile valleys. I live alone here in the dome. The crew are in the valleys, you will see. We had AS technology. We tried to hide it from the ghosts.
We always knew,
the ghost said smoothly.
We thought there should be a witness, you see. One of us originals who remembered Earth should be there to tell the story firsthand. We hoarded what we had, the AS, I mean, but time passed. There were 10 of us left, then 5, then 2, then... I was the last of the original crew, I was the last. Yet I was never alone. Michael Poole was always with me when I despaired. I knew you would save us, I knew.
Jophiel frowned.
Always with you? I don't understand. You were always with me.
Susan Chen sighed and seemed to crumble, perhaps fainting.
Nicola supported her and Harris rushed forward, reaching for his medical kit.
The ambassador rolled complacently.
Humans are my object of study. How fascinating you are.
Nicola glared up at it with a look of pure hate. Chapter 16. After the first month on Ghost Plateau, as Susan Chen called it, a month the Cauchy crew spent mostly securing their physical survival, Chen said she had a proposal for them.
You know that we work for the ghosts down on the planet. I mean in the Chile valleys where the Chile buildings grow.
Nicola grinned.
Where the Chile buildings grow, Susan, what a line.
Susan's own smile, like all her expressions, was a sketch.
We, I mean my crewmates, my charges, they have us seek Chile artifacts. Now the ghosts intend to send a party down to retrieve what we have collected. And they invite you to join, a party of you. Perhaps 3 or 4 as an introductory assignment. You will meet my crew. We can show you how we work. The ghosts, I think, will be interested in how we interact. We 2 crews separated for so long. They like to explore us.
That withered smile grew more wintry. Jophiel suspected there was a world of horror in that one word, explore. He said, I'm guessing it's a hazardous assignment. Susan shrugged.
They prefer to send humans in places they regard as too dangerous for ghosts. These are, after all, Chile stations. Though their purpose is little understood, we suspect, even by the ghosts.
Chile stations... More words that made Jophiel shiver.
But we have survived for centuries despite these losses. And I learned caution.
She eyed Jophiel.
I would recommend you send a party. The ghost's supervision is not omniscient. There may be advantages to be gained.
Nicola and Jophiel exchanged a hungry glance. It had been a frustrating month since they had been brought here. A month of not doing much more than consolidate for what looked like it would be a long, if not permanent, stay on this world. all of it blighted by the dull burden of the 40% higher gravity. They had travelled little, seen less, learned nothing. Even Susan, after that first gushing meeting, had seemed inhibited about speaking to them. And Jophiel was aware that the crew's forced adaptation to their imprisonment was a ghastly echo of what Susan and her crew had gone through centuries ago. "Agreed," he said immediately. "Thank you, Susan. The question is, who goes?"
"You and me," Nicola snapped. "This first time."
"Look, I'm a virtual. Away from human technology, I'll need a projection pack."
"Hardly a problem. If Susan's right about possible advantage or danger, we need our best eyes on the ground. With one other, maybe Harris, our resident expert on the ghosts. And also Harris has medical training. He can take a good look at the Gourd people, and he can carry you on his back, Jophiel. Your support unit, 140% gravity and all, serves him right."
Susan nodded.
"I will accompany you. I rarely venture into the valleys these days, usually only when some catastrophe has struck my crew. This time I will make an exception for the chance to talk. The ghosts may eavesdrop, but there will be opportunities."
Nicola touched her shoulder.
"You're a remarkable person, Susan Chen. Come on, let's get this done."
Chapter 17. The three of them were to be flown down from Ghost Plateau into a feature about 800 kilometers to the planet's east, which Susan, who among other things had done her best to compile a global map of Guba Sea, called Chile Valley Number 5. The four of them climbed into, as Jophiel immediately recognized, what had evidently once been the hull of a standard Pool Industries flitter, originally carried by the scattership Gourd. The propulsion units had long ago been cut away, leaving a human life support shell that was now embedded in a tangle of ghost rope. The hull itself was much aged, and in its interior every surface was rubbed to smoothness, the worn-out soft parts of the couches replaced by hand-stitched cushions and blankets. It was strange to Jophiel to inspect what was, for him, contemporary technology so obviously aged. The craft's control instruments, detached or inert, soft screens probably blank for a millennium. When the craft lifted from the ground, evidently held firm in the ghost's inertia control field, there was barely a sense of motion. But the view out of the window was astounding. Harris Kemp goggled, his forehead pressed to the window beside his seat.
"Take a look back at that plateau. Makes Tharsis on Mars look like mud pie, and those valleys!"
Susan seemed oddly pleased, Jophiel thought, as if she was proud of her prison planet. Chile Valley Number 5 turned out to be a vast rift valley, deep and long, its walls sheer, one of several tremendous cracks in the crust that led off from the gigantic bulge of the plateau. It seemed clear to Jophiel that this feature had nothing to do with erosion by running water, like Earth's Grand Canyon. It was nothing less than a crack in the crust of the planet. The craft dropped into the valley, passing along one of the great walls. The light was poor, the clouds thick in this world's dense layer of atmosphere. But still they were close enough to the wall to make out detail. Jophiel was no geologist, but he recognized the signs of past catastrophes in the complex strata. Here a sheet of basalt, a relic of some huge volcanic event, was wearing out of the wall as softer rock corroded. Above that was a layer of tumbled rocks, huge and angular, as if dumped by a tremendous tsunami. Above that, beds of what looked like sandstone, deposited by some vanished ocean. And here and there, clinging to the strata or dangling in blankets over the cliff face, a pale, almost apologetic green.
"Life," Nicola said, staring out.
Harris groaned.
"I wish I had better instruments than my own eyes to observe all this."
Maybe next trip, Jophiel murmured, if we can get the ghost to trust us a little more. Is it life, though, Susan?
Indeed, it is. And